It was a distressing moment in the short history of Van Diemen's Land. In the middle of September 1831, the newspapers in Hobart and Launceston reported the details of what they called a most appalling affair. The first news was that a prominent settler, Captain Bartholomew Boyle Thomas, and his manager James Parker, were missing from their property Northdown on the northwest fringe of the settled districts. After a few days of painful suspense, the dreadful news broke. They'd been killed by the Aborigines. "All doubts are now removed," declared the Launceston Advertiser. "They have been murdered, barbarously murdered, by the inhuman savages." The paper drew a harsh lesson. Thus, two more respectable and highly respected individuals have been added to the list of those who have fallen victim to the barbarity of a race which no kindness can soften and which nothing short of utter annihilation can subdue. The deaths deeply affected the settler community. It was a year since many of the men had participated in the Black Line, which had attempted to clear the hostile Aboriginal bands from the settled districts. The approach of spring held promise of renewed conflict, which it seemed nothing could subdue. Thomas was well known and admired. He had served in the British Army for 10 years during the Napoleonic Wars and had fought with Bolivar in South America. He was known as one of the settlers who sought to develop friendly relations with the local Aboriginal bands. The Launceston Independent declared that the whole colony called aloud for retribution, deep and lasting, not only on the perpetrators of the deeds, should they come within our power, but upon the whole race. There were two distinctive features of the affair. The first was the settlers did not appreciate at the time that Aboriginal resistance was at an end. Thomas and Parker were the last two victims of almost 250 killed. The other unusual feature of the situation was that the three Aborigines responsible for the killing were captured and taken to Launceston. A hurried assembled coroner's jury was able to clearly establish their guilt. The question then was what should be done with them. Intense debate within the Launceston community led a settler to write one of the most important public documents about the relations between Aborigines and settlers to have appeared in the Australian colonies during the whole of the 19th century. The correspondent, who signed himself J.E., began by declaring that his feelings prompted him to wish the extermination of the blacks, but after more mature reflection on the subject, some solemn questions presented themselves. "Are these unhappy creatures," he wondered, "the subjects of our king in a state of rebellion, or are they an injured people whom we have invaded and with whom we are at war? Are they within the reach of our laws, or are they to be judged by the law of nations? Are they to be viewed in the light of murderers or as prisoners of war? Have they been guilty of any crime under the law of nations which is punishable by death? Or have they only been carrying on a war in their way? Are they British subjects at all, or a foreign enemy who has never yet been subdued and which resists our usurped authority and dominion?" Many profound questions were thrown open by the correspondent's speculation, and there were no easy and more comforting answers. Before or else was the question of warfare. How that was answered shaped everything else. He had no doubt about it and simply declared, "We are at war with them. They look upon us as enemies, as invaders, as their oppressors and persecutors. They resist our invasion. They have never been subdued, therefore they are not rebellious subjects, but an injured nation, defending in their own way their rightful possessions, which we have torn from them by force." The correspondent reminded his readers of contemporary attitudes to prisoners of war, who were not normally put to death for acts committed in the field of battle. But he demanded even more, calling for understanding and compassion. "What we call their crime is what in a white man we should call patriotism. Where is the man amongst ourselves who would not resist an invading enemy, who would not avenge the murder of his parents, the ill usage of his wife and daughters, and the spoliation of all his earthly goods by a foreign enemy. If he had an opportunity, he who would not do so would be scouted, execrated, nay, executed as a coward and a traitor, while he who did would be immortalised as a patriot. Why then shall we deny the same feelings to the blacks? How can we condemn as a crime in these savages what we would esteem a virtue in ourselves? Why punish a black man with death for doing that which a white man would be executed for not doing? Given the situation at the time, they were highly provocative thoughts. We have little knowledge of how they were received in the community. A correspondent calling himself Tom Tough wrote a short critical response, but that seemed to be the end of the public controversy. The three imprisoned Aborigines were not brought to trial, but sent into exile, like all their surviving contemporaries, to the islands in Bass Strait. That is, they were treated as prisoners of war and not as common criminals, as the correspondent advocated. So the immediate matter of how to treat the killers of Thomas and Parker was answered decisively and expeditiously. But the more general question did not go away. They remained highly relevant during the rest of the century, as the conflict seen in Tasmania was recapitulated right across the continent. And the key issue at the centre of the correspondent's letter remains as potent now as it was 180 years ago. Was there a war between invading settlers and Aborigines that lasted from the beginning of settlement to the early 20th century? If so, what does it mean for the way we interpret the whole national experience? Is there, even now, a general acceptance of Aboriginal resistance as legitimate defence of their property and sovereignty? Can we see the warriors as patriots? Are we able to treat them with the same respect we accord the servicemen and women who died in overseas wars? Will we ever seek to immortalise them as we do our war dead? Or do we fall short of the understanding and compassion embodied in that still challenging letter of September 1831?